declaring that a constitutional crisis is upon us.
Approaching a constitutional crisis.
A constitutional crisis or a constitutional confrontation or something else?
That is the big question in Washington. Are we in a constitutional crisis? Well, let's ask the historians. Ed Ayers and Nathan Connolly, co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Hi, guys.
Hey, Jeremy.
So right now, the debate over whether the president's refusal to comply with congressional subpoenas counts as a constitutional crisis. But generally, to use one political scientist definition, this is Keith Whittington at Princeton University, a constitutional crisis is either when someone breaks the law as written in the Constitution or the Constitution isn't structured to resolve a dispute between the branches. With that definition in mind, Ed, when was the first constitutional crisis?
Well, how long have you had a constitution, basically, is the answer to that question. I mean, in the first decade after the country is founded, everything is up in the air. I mean, there's no political parties built in, so it's not clear who is supposed to be organizing opposition and support. So everything from where the Capitol is going to be located to the Whiskey Rebellion, which George Washington has to send troops out to put down American citizens, to the Alien Sedition Acts, where people are talking about foreign influence and the states have the right to reject all those acts. It's just one crisis after another at the outset, Jeremy.
And Nathan, what can we take away from that? The fact that this started right at the very beginning of the Constitution.
Well, obviously, you have so many issues that are going to be divisive and really defining the country from its founding. But original intent is not a defining feature. I think that's the number one takeaway, right? There was never really consensus about the meaning of the Constitution or the organization of the country during the early Republic. In some ways, we can think of the 1790s as a kind of rolling constitutional crisis. There are feverish politics in the period, everything from executive appointment to federalism, tax and tariff, Bill of Rights, and all these crises as they're being settled in one way or another are actually giving credence to the notion that the Constitution may in fact need to be a fixed document or a sacred text. And so in some ways, the crises of the 1790s help give the Constitution its meaning.
And Ed, once you get into the 19th century, when the country gets a little more mature, what's the constitutional crisis that really sticks out?
Well, we had that thing called the Civil War, which basically is a constitutional crisis. It's not clear what the Constitution says about the future of the expansion of slavery. But this comes to a head after the war when Andrew Johnson, Abraham Lincoln's vice presidential appointee, assumes office after Lincoln's assassination. Mm-hmm. And people had admired him as being a staunch advocate of the Union, even though he's from Tennessee, a Southerner. But comes into Reconstruction, the radical Republicans have in mind a whole transformation of the United States to enfranchise the formerly enslaved people, to actually use the power of the federal government to create a true situation of fairness and equity for people. And Johnson thinks that's completely inappropriate, does everything that he can to slow it down and stop it. And so you have a true constitutional crisis in which the Republicans are saying, look, Congress is the one who's driving this Reconstruction Act. It's our job to be spending this money, to be making these policies. And Johnson says, absolutely not. And here's I'm going to prove it, because I'm going to kick out this cabinet member, right, Edwin Stanton, that Lincoln had appointed, and because he wants to follow you radicals to overturn the country in ways that I don't approve of, because I'm fundamentally racist. Mm-hmm. Congress says, nope, we're going to pass a law called the Tenure of Office Act that says you may not remove him. And the impeachment of Andrew Johnson grew around that specific issue, even though it had a whole kind of aura of all other kinds of conflict surrounding it. So Johnson was impeached in the sense that the House voted for that, but the Senate came within one vote of convicting him. And so he was not removed from mm-hmm. office. And some people at the time said, I'm not going to vote to remove him from office precisely to protect the Constitution. I believe the separation of powers are important. So even though that moment came and went, that issue still hung in the air.
And the legislation that was at issue in Johnson's conflict with Congress, the Tenure of Office Act, was itself deemed unconstitutional in the 1920s by the Supreme Court. It had even been repealed earlier by the President Grant administration for reasons having to do with Grant's own desires to basically strengthen the power of the office. But what's so incredible about this debate, of course, is what exactly is the extent of presidential power? The courts have to come in and help to decide that. And just to give us a sense of perspective, right? I mean, in the most recent presidential administration, President Trump, was able to fire Secretary of State Rex Tillerson in March of 2018 via Twitter, right? I mean, such ease in transitioning one cabinet would have been inconceivable in the 1860s, regardless of the form of communication.
But just as rude to fire somebody by Twitter, even back then.
Indeed.
much more efficient.
Now, once you get into the 20th century, closer to the present, did we have any major constitutional crises in the last 100 years?
Well, one that does jump right to the fore revolves around the enforcement of the Supreme Court's ruling in Brown versus the Board of Education. The landmark decision in 1954, the Little Rock School District actually agrees to follow the law of the land in terms of Brown. They interview 80 black students, arrive at 9, right, the very famous Little Rock 9, who are supposed to then enter the school in September of 1957. A white mob of parents, children, bystanders decides that they are going to prevent the students from entering, and the governor of Arkansas, so the state level, Orville Faubus, decides he wants to deploy the Arkansas National Guard to basically defend the rights of the whites who are opposing desegregation. Mm-hmm. So again, under federalism, with the division of powers, federal law enforcement is supposed to supersede that at the state level. But here is Faubus basically flouting federal law. And there's a lot of back and forth between Faubus and the federal courts. Ultimately, even though he's reluctant, Eisenhower signs Executive Order 10730 on September 24th of 1957 and basically places all 10,000 men of the Arkansas National Guard under federal control. He sends 1,000 U.S. Army paratroopers from the 101st Airborne to back up those troops. And then ultimately makes it possible for African-American students, again, just the 9, to enjoy the school year. But the 101st Airborne has to stay occupying that school through the school year. And Faubus, in response, winds up shutting down the entire school district for the following academic year. So there it's a really classic case of federal, local, and state power all really running up together.
We're not there right now.
Well, no, I mean, we're not there now, but I think it's important to recognize that even the crisis that was raised in Little Rock is still very pertinent, which is simply to say, where does authority derive, right? Does it reside in right. the popular sovereignty of the Arkansas, you know, whites who are there protesting in the Supreme Court that rules in Brown and the president? If that is unclear, you get these kinds of crises.
But Ed, would it be fair to even call what we're in now a constitutional crisis because the Constitution is pretty clear and we are following the Constitution right now and it will make its way through the courts. Now, if the courts decided something and then the White House said no, that maybe would be a constitutional crisis.
Yeah, right now it seems to me the Constitution is doing what it's supposed to do. It's mm-hmm. using the separate branches of government to try to adjudicate this. But I think you put your finger on it, Jeremy. If the courts are not able to resolve this and it's just loggerheads between the presidency and Congress, it would not take us long to be in a crisis.
But we probably wouldn't end up with the National Guard or the military being involved either way, I would think.
The good news is that it's a diffuse and kind of slow motion crisis, even though it seems to be pervasive, because it's all going into the courts. But you know, I think you know the example that Nathan's just using about segregation and integration of schools suggests that courts can leave things unresolved as well. You know, with all deliberate speed turned out to be a long time.
Right.
When you look back at all of this history, I wonder what the founding fathers would think of the fact that, first of all, we're still paying such close attention to the Constitution that was written so long ago, and secondly, that it has been able to withstand so many of these crises over the centuries.
Well, the Constitution is an extraordinarily malleable document, in part because it has this division of powers between states and federal governments, and it has obviously a way that you can revise a document over time. And in some cases, I think, as the long history of Reconstruction or other forms of equality politics demonstrate, you have to, in some ways, test the Constitution's own spirit and letter by simply asking the laws be enforced as written. I mean, it's not necessarily the same as the 1790s, but I do think one of the things that will come out of this moment is a much clearer sense of the meaning of the Constitution and its sturdy quality relative to really basic questions of due process and really congressional power.
That is Nathan Connolly and Ed Ayers, historians and co-hosts of the weekly podcast Backstory. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.